Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio. I'm Callum Stoneman. Tech Talk is our weekly look at what's new and what's going on in the world of technology from a blind and partially sighted perspective. We always love to hear from you, so if you want to get in contact with the show, please do. techtalk@rnib.org.uk is our email address. You can send a written email or attach a voice message if you want to. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Coming up this week, we'll be catching up with all the action from this week's Site Village Central event in Birmingham, with vendors such as Lunar Glasses, Tavip and Humanware. Plus, we'll be hearing details of a new trial from Action Audio, which is aiming to keep blind and partially sighted tennis fans up to date with the action on the court. Joining us this week are Jackie Brown and Hubert Pavalkovich. Welcome in to you both. Jackie, what's new with you this week?
Well, because of all the hot weather, I thought it might be an opportunity to talk about fans. Now, of course, I've got a cohort of fans all over the world, but the fan I'm talking about is... we've been using for a couple of years a Dyson fan. We bought it specifically when our German Shepherd Bumble was alive, because she wouldn't sleep downstairs at all. She had to be where we were. So that meant her coming upstairs, and she would lie right next to my side of the bed, on her bed. But we noticed that she was getting very, very warm in the summertime, because the heat obviously travels up. And we decided to invest in a fan. We had a sort of a fan, a kind of a cheapy one, if you like. But it was so noisy that we just didn't like it on at night. So we had a friend of the family who had a Dyson, and she said, borrow this and see whether you think it's any good, and see whether it's, you know, it's not too noisy for you. And we loved it, and so did Bumble. So we invested in one a couple of years ago, but I've had a look, and that fan is still available. Now, there are some fans that you can buy and you can control them through an app. This one from Dyson, you can't. It doesn't seem to be on that list. But to be honest, I'm not bothered, because there's a little remote control that I leave on my bedside locker, and I can adjust the fan quite easily from the little remote control. So there's only a few buttons on it. They are tactile-ish. And so the top left button would be to turn it on or off. The one to the right would be to adjust whether you want cold air or hot air. And the ones below that are on the left side. It's kind of an up and down button to adjust the speed of the fan. So, you know, the higher you go, the faster it goes and the more air that comes out. And the right hand one of those is the same, but with the heat. I really love having this fan. We use it, although Bumble sadly passed away in March this year, just short of her 13th birthday. I sort of call it Bumble's fan, really, because we did buy her it. But it is really, really useful to have, especially in this incredibly hot weather. It's called the Dyson Pure Hot Cool Purifying Fan Heater. It's in white and silver. At the moment, it is still available, because I checked before I decided to talk about this. There probably is an upgraded model. As I say, we've had it 2 years. It is probably a bit more than you'd want to pay for a fan. It is, on according to their price at the moment, $330, which is, you know, quite a lot of money for a fan, I guess. But you'd be surprised how worth it and how much it comes into play when the weather is very hot. And we do seem to be getting very hot bouts of weather at the moment. So it is an investment.
You know, I remember at my student accommodation, they had, I think every room had this, or some of the rooms had them. It was just one of those little like plug-in fans that was just there in the corner, you know, if you needed it. And if you didn't want it, you could, you know, put it somewhere. But they just had that in there when you first moved in, and I just kept it where it was, and I thought it was just one of those simple, like, you know, you plug it in, there was a little dial on the front, so I thought that was the like speed or the, you know, intensity or whatever you'd call it, which it was. So there was a really hot day, and before I was going to my lectures, I plugged it in, turned a little dial, it started blowing. Yeah, brilliant. Got back and my room was still roasting and it was blowing out hot air.
Oh no.
I thought, hang on, what the hell's going on here? Turns out, when I got someone sighted to look at it, one of my flatmates, turns out as well as the dial, there's a little touch screen on top. And I don't know whether it had last been set to heat or whether I'd knocked it to heat as I was doing the dial. But yeah, what I thought was just a simple little fan, there was all sorts of controls on the touch screen.
Oh.
Which you couldn't feel. It just felt like a smooth kind of top of the thing. And sure enough, I put my finger on top of it just to see if I could feel it. And it was going beep, 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 beep. I was pressing all sorts of... Don't know what I was saying it to.
They really are useful, but as I say, you know, some of them can be quite expensive. You know, Dyson's renowned for being a lot more money than your bulk standard fan, but it is quiet as well. I mean, yeah, sure, if you turn it up really, really high, then you are going to get some noise from it. You are going to hear the fan making a noise, but if you have it on a reasonable temperature, you know, speed, and you point it towards your bed, which is what we've done. I mean, Bumble, she absolutely loved it. She put her head in front of it and she just stretched out on her bed, and she absolutely loved having it. She found it very hot upstairs. You've got to think of your animals as well, you know.
I must admit, this is when I get pretty geeky about this sort of thing, because we've just got a really like basic fan now, and I just hooked it up to a smart plug, and I've got several like routines going to turn it on and off at certain times or when it gets to certain temperatures. Jess loves me at this time of year, I'm sure you can imagine. Hubert, anything caught your eye this week?
For me, I could be late to the party on this one, but I was on a call to a friend recently who's a fellow techie, and he's given me a JAWS shortcut, which I've never heard of, but I have to say, I quite like, and that is Windows Alt I. Which I did not know about, but what it does is gives you information when you're doing a Word document as to where there might be some formatting errors. I tested it with fairly basic, just putting too much blank lines and too many spaces in between certain words, and it would actually take you to various formatting errors and tell you what they are.
Oh, cool!
So you can correct them, which I did not know existed.
Oh no, that's amazing!
Now, the way it phrases them can be a bit strange. So, for example, it would say space run at 35. So, character 35 and space run, I've presumed, is too many spaces. So, you will have to kind of figure out what it means when it says certain things. But once you do, I think that is a really useful shortcut. For those that don't know, if you want to scan your document for formatting errors, it's Alt Windows key I is your best friend.
That's brilliant.
Oh, thank you, Hubert. That's amazing, because you know, if you're doing something, if you're composing a document, or you're doing something and you want it to look nice for, you know, visually, and if you've taken maybe an image, or you've copied some text and put it, you know, into the document, It can really mess up your formatting. It can, you can get a totally different font, depends where you get it from. And it is really important, especially for students who are doing a thesis, or they're doing a piece of work that they're going to be marked for it if you make mistakes like that. So that is number one for me. That is brilliant, because I would use the JAWS key and F in a Word document, and that gives you the sort of the formatting. You know, it tells you whether you've got bullet points, where the cursor is. It tells you if you've got attributes like bold or italic or turned on, whatever. And it tells you if your document's centered. But that, Hubert, I'm going to give that a go after this.
Yeah, me too. Because that JAWS key in F, I knew about that one, but that only works either where your cursor is or with what it's selected, doesn't it? If you can, mind you, I don't know what happened if you did like Control A and then did JAWS F on a massive document. But yeah, I have exactly
probably be confused.
Well, yeah, I'd have thought so, because I have exactly the same. Like I've The number of times I've copied and pasted things into documents, it happens all the time at work. And then when they peer review it, obviously my colleagues know me anyway, so they know they're not particularly bothered, but they're just kind of like, oh, just so you know, the font got a bit weird here. I've just changed it.
That's right. I've been told the same. But when I was doing my master's degree, and I had to produce this massive document, and I had to be really, really careful. It took me longer to proofread it and go over it and over it again than it did to actually write the thing. It just was very frustrating, because if you were copying a quote from a book or part of something, a quote from somebody that you needed to add in, you have to be really careful about what font has been used. And some people go, oh, it doesn't matter, that's not important. But actually, it is.
It is sometimes, yeah. Well, I've finally done the phone upgrade this week. I've gone from I was going to hold off and wait until September when the new ones came out, but the battery life on my 13 was just getting worse and worse. So I've gone for the 16E, which I know is meant to be the basic one, but to be honest, I think it's fine. I mean, I've had a pro phone, but how many of the pro features were I really using? You know? LiDAR, not really found it much use for it. Bit of an underwhelming upgrade, if I'm honest. Like, I'm used to the days of setting up an iPhone and you kind of go, ah, oh, great, wow, that's new, that's new, oh, that's brilliant. This, I was kind of went through the setup process with transferring all my data, and apart from Apple Intelligence, I was just a bit like, oh, okay, that's exactly the same. So now here's a question. I'll say it was an underwhelming upgrade until I started playing with the action button, and now I'm struggling to find what to do with it. Especially when you bring Siri shortcuts.
You almost need like a selection row of action buttons.
I thought they would give you the option to do this, like have a few options. You know, you hold it down and it says, okay, what do you want to do? Right, and then you select a list of op you can have a list of options in there, but yeah, can't do that. iOS 26, maybe.
I think what I'd like is if you hold it down, it does something. If you press it once, it does something. If you press it twice, it does something, and then three times, it would be nice to kind of do that to make it more, more intuitive, more functioning, more useful.
I just use the action button. I find it just the easiest thing is to use it on its default, which if you know, like for recording this program, I just press and hold it for a second and it says silent. And I actually find that that is, for me, that's the most one of the things I'd want to do with my phone straight away is if I'm in a meeting somewhere, I want to quickly put it on silent, so I just press the action button, and that is, I think, the default. Now, whether the 16E, whether they've changed it a bit so that you can have a lot more than that, I know you can, change the action button to have things like voice memos. I think you can record, but it doesn't offer it. Not on my phone, anyway. If you hold it down, it doesn't offer it. Only offers ring or silent.
That's odd. Yeah, mine. I've got quite a few options in mind. Okay.
There is an option in settings to go into actions button. So maybe you have to do it on the 15 Pro. I don't know. Maybe I have to go in there and choose the option. But that's less convenient, you know.
Yeah. All right. Cheers, guys. Stick around. This is Tech Talk.
You join me here on RNIB Connect Radio at Site Village in Birmingham, and I've got some news about some really exciting new technology. It's called CapEx, and I've got Aaron, who's from CapEx. Aaron, could you just sort of explain exactly what it is? Because I think it's all to do with orientation and getting around.
Yes, exactly. So we have launched CapEx, which is an autonomous orientation device that is to avoid all the dangers you can encounter while walking outdoor. So I said danger, but it includes, of course, the obstacles, whether they are moving or fixed. But also, we can detect any danger from the ground up to the man's height, whatever the danger it is. Example is to distinguish, for example, the road from the sidewalk to avoid any danger for the person.
And explain to me how it works, because I've just been having a sort of little sort of demonstration of the headset, and it's got a camera on it, so it's live, isn't it? Footage or something.
Yeah, CapEx is composed of two elements. The one is hold on the head, like the headset, but we have also added to the right side of the headset the camera. So this is to capture the environment. And the other part is the computing unit, which process all the information and give the feedback to the user how to orient himself or herself. So as I said, it's autonomous because all the processing is done in the compute unit and you don't need any cloud computing or internet or whatever connection you may need to make it work. So yes, it helps you to distinguish everything with a single camera and build a 3D model of the environment you have in front of you, including the semantic information. For example, on each pixel level of the image captured, we can determine whether it is a car, a person, a road, a sidewalk, a bus stop, or sidewalk, or traffic lights, or whatever you can imagine for the person walking around. So with this, plus another information that we built from a single image, which is the metric distances. So with a single camera, at each pixel level, we compute or estimate the distances. And combining the semantic information and the metric information, we build a 3D metric world, including the segmentation. So this helps to make the analysis and to direct the person using the 3D sound to avoid all the dangers and obstacles.
So that sound that somebody's getting, because the headset had, as I say, it had the camera on one side and also had speakers, which I think were in front of your ear, so you're also able to hear the environment. But are they getting sort of descriptions of what's in front of them, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, so we have three kinds of information that we give to the user. The first one is a 3D sound. 3D sound is like a sound placed in the space in front of you. You just need to follow this sound to avoid all the dangers and obstacles. So this is for orientation. Now, on top of this, we can add information about the urban elements next to you or in front of you. An example would be you are looking for, while walking, you're looking for sidewalks, or you're looking for stairs, or you're willing to cross the road using the pedestrian crossroad. So it's the user's choice to select all these elements or one of them. And while we are guiding to or notifying him to avoid the obstacles, if we capture in the scene the crossroad, we will notify the person with the 3D TTS. So he will hear the direction where the crossroad is with the distance from the person to the crossroad. So you can orient yourself, then you follow the direction where you hear the crossroad to get to the crossroad.
So when you're walking around, you're obviously listening to the noise, but then the device will be telling you there's a crossing on your right and that?
Yes, it can tell you hourly directions at 10 o'clock, 12 o'clock or 3 o'clock, but it will also tell you just the 3D TTS, which is a placement of the where the sound is coming to you or the voice is coming from you, and you will have the obstacles or whatever you had chosen will be that direction only. So why we choose this technology? Because it's more precise than the hourly orientation, because we can only say hours and it's a 30 degree of precision. While with 3D sound or 3D TTS, we have 10 degree of precision, which is much precise than anything else that we can find.
Sounds absolutely fantastic to be able to walk about and get that sort of information as you're walking around in real time without any sort of, you know, as you say, cloud processing or anything like that. Sounds absolutely fantastic.
Yes, actually, the real challenge, it was twofold, I would say, the most important. The first one is to develop our own AI models to estimate the distances from a single camera, monocular camera, and also to combine with the semantic segmentation to make it what is in front of you and compute locally without any cloud computing, say. So the reason is that we develop it to make it very tiny AI models, yet performant, but runs locally in the compute unit.
That sounds fantastic. And when will CapEx be available here in the UK?
Well, our planning shows that it will be available in October this year.
Fantastic. And would it be for people to go to Sight & Sound's website for more info?
Yes, please. Or on CAPSIS website, that you can have also the same information.
And the CAPSIS website?
It's capsys.com.
Well, Aaron, thank you very much indeed for showing me CAPEX here at Sight Village on RNIB Connect Radio. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
I'm on the Sight & Sound stand, and I've got Pierre, who's launching a new device called Luna. Pierre, just tell me a little bit about what Luna is.
Luna is a pair of glasses that help people who suffer from night blindness due to conditions like retinitis pigmentosa, for example.
And how does it work? What's the sort of, technology, if you're able to tell me a little about it, about the technology?
Yes, it's a brand new technology, actually. I have a pair of glasses here in my hand, and it actually has a very light-sensitive camera inside. And what it does is we take the image of the camera and we enhance it and light it and we project it inside the glass. So you wear the glasses like a regular pair of glasses. They look like a regular pair of glasses. But when you look through them, it's like somebody switched on a light bulb, right? So suddenly you can see with a small section that is still okay for you. You can go out and about because you can do it by yourself. You're not blind, completely blind.
And as you said, is it mainly for people with night blindness? Is that the main sort of people who it would work for, or other conditions?
Yes. Well, it's for people who suffer from night blindness due to different conditions, right? For eye diseases like retinitis pigmentosa, but it could also have for people with glaucoma or other eye diseases. You just need to try them out and see if they work for you.
I suppose, you know, sort of having these and being able to try them and see if they work for you is really the point about it. And it you know, may be something that could work for certain eye conditions, for night blindness and other eye conditions.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the way it works. So you just need to contact Sight & Sound. They will be our distributor from September when we're launching, and they will be happy to help you.
There's obviously lots of technology here, but lots of services as well. And I'm now with Julian, who's from the Technology Association for Visually Impaired People. Julian, just tell me a little bit about who you are and what you do.
Yeah, I'm Julian Garner. I'm the Chief Executive of TABIP, and I help to organise the day-to-day activities of the charity. We're a membership organisation of 550 visually impaired people who are passionate about tech and passionate about helping other people with tech. So we're free to join. People can go online and sign up, and you'll get the odd email from us telling you about our activities. And yeah, it's people. We have monthly webinars where people can come and have a chat about tech and ask questions. And we've got a great masterclass series on technology. So people interested in keeping on up-to-date technology and hearing what's coming through in terms of new products, then we run masterclasses. We did one with Waymo. We've done them on iOS interfaces, how to use an iPhone. We've got one coming up around PCs and making backups. And so quite real variety of topics that people are interested in. And we also have an annual conference called TechaBreak, which takes place in Harrogate in September. And that's a great opportunity for people to come along and have a relaxing few days, finding out about tech and meeting other members. So yeah, there's lots going on. So it's free to join. And yeah, people can just get in touch with us.
And I suppose TAVIP is all about technology, but it's for people who might not sort of know too much about technology through to people who might be sort of experts at it.
Absolutely. It's a full range. It's been around for a long time. It was founded in 1969 as the British Computer Association for the Blind, and was formed by computer programmers who were visually impaired. But now it's a much broader audience. So we have people who have recently lost their sight or whose sight may be deteriorating over time. So maybe they used to use magnification and different accessibility settings, and now they're wanting to use speech. And so we can talk people through the different options around that, and they can chat to others who have used that technology. And then there's a huge amount of interest around AI apps and tools, so there's lots of interest around that. We have conversations and webinars finding out about the latest tech and how that's working.
I think that's the thing, isn't it? It's about all this sort of new technology that keeps on coming on board, like AI and everything else. And people, you know, might hear it and think, oh, what exactly is that all about? It might sound a little bit scary, but you know, been able to talk to other visually impaired people through TAFIP about it and have, you say, you know, sort of conferences or to have time to have webinars and stuff and things like that. People not so necessarily scared of it.
Absolutely. And I think the power of TAFIP is it's people themselves talking about it. So it can feel quite overwhelming when you another app comes out or there's another change or there's a new phone. And the danger is that people just think, oh, it's too much, it's too difficult, I'm just going to give up and not bother. So TAFIP provides a really positive space for people to just sit and talk to other people who are visually impaired about their experience. And I think that gives people a lot of confidence about what they can use and maybe taking the next steps with confidence and having someone to talk to as they try it.
And also, you've got a very good website which has a lot of sort of information, blogs, and has guides and that kind of stuff for various technology.
That's right. We've got a directory on there which lists different resources, different organisations in the sector involved in tech. We've got a directory of trainers, so if people want to access trainers, specialists, then there are freelancers on there that they can access and they can privately access and pay for support, which sometimes people want to do, as well as other services of other charities that people can access, such as, you know, RNIB support, guide dogs, grants for equipment from other charities. So there's some really good resources on there that people might not be aware of. So yeah, have a look at the TAFIP website. And then if you've got questions, you can contact us on info@tavip.org.uk. That's TAFIP, TAVIP.org.uk. So yeah, check us out, send us an email, ask us a question or join up for free.
Well, Julian, thank you very much indeed for chatting with me here on RNIB Connect Radio and telling me all about TAFIP.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you. Enjoy the rest of the conference.
Thanks to Toby. We've got a little bit more from Sight Village later on.
The Wimbledon Tennis Championships may have concluded at the All England Club, but we're asking how blind and partially sighted tennis fans can follow along with the action more easily. I'm joined now by Tim Devine, Chief Invention Officer from developers of Action Audio, innovation company AKQA. Tim, welcome back to RNIB Connect Radio.
Thanks so much. Great to be here.
Well, Tim, if you could start at the beginning, what is Action Audio and how does it work?
Action Audio uses data that's generated through the playing of sport to surface more information about what's happening on the court to give those of us who are blind or low vision more agency to figure out what's going on in the game.
And for tennis, Action Audio has been used at the Australian Open and Queen's, among others. What's the reaction been like from blind and partially sighted fans?
Yeah, I mean, it's been phenomenal, to be honest. And we had this sort of provocation, I suppose, 4 or 5 years ago now, and we weren't sure whether it would be meaningful because, you know, the difference between Action Audio and commentary is that it's not using voice. So it's all abstract sounds. We wanted to create something. We thought there might be an opportunity to create something that was complementary to the commentary. So in the same way, the footage is complementary. The camera footage and feed is complementary to the commentary. We thought that there would be an opportunity for us to surface a bit of information that you get from all the ridiculous amount of data that is captured from a sport. And the reaction has been phenomenal. People have actually found like it was the timeliness, because we use real-time data that is used for electronic line calling. In tennis, it gives us the ability to create things that get to surface information really fast in a lot of detail that gets missed in commentary and even in radio commentary. It's just not possible to capture all of that. So people feel wrapped up in the emotion. They can kind of celebrate and not celebrate when things happen and when everybody else does, because that's what sport is. Sport is social. So it's really nice to be able to hear that feedback.
Is it hard to pick up for new users? If you're used to experiencing TV or radio commentary for sports, does it take a while then to get into the rhythm of a tennis match?
Yeah, well, as we develop it for different sports, we work with those of us who are blind or low vision to kind of figure out what's a good level of, you know, onboarding, I suppose, required, because we've worked with the NBA in the last couple of years and, you know, there's thousands of games in a season. It's ridiculous. So if you're a big fan, then you watch a lot of basketball, you experience a lot of basketball. So what we found from the research was that people, want it to be accessible and as familiar as possible as it can be. So when in tennis, there is a blind version of tennis. So blind tennis uses rattles in the ball. So it's pretty easy to understand that when the ball is hit, that's the sound of where the ball is. We use the rattle and spatialize it so you can kind of hear where it is. And then we do have sounds for forehand and backhand. And we have a sound for how close it is to the line. So sport is really about building tension. And I think most entertainment is about tension and release. And sport's really good at that. So there's nothing better than watching it or getting experiencing a tennis player that is just pushing the ball to the edges of the play space. It just builds more and more tension. It's like, will it go out? Will it stay in? It requires some onboarding, but it's a balance between value and effort to onboard.
And you mentioned tennis and basketball specifically there. Are there other applications to the technology? Have you tried it in other sports or maybe outside of sport itself?
Yeah, it's very good for sports. So we're working with the NHL. At the moment, we're talking to the NHL about doing it with them. And yeah, we've got football covered as well. It's very similar to basketball, football for action audio. But outside of sport, it feels like it's a bit too open world. So the good thing about sport, tennis is a really good example, is that it's very sequential. So especially in a singles match, so when one person's hitting, then the other person is receiving, and you know there's likely to be a bounce. You know, all these things you can kind of infer, which you don't think about when you're experiencing tennis. And there's boundaries, very real boundaries, whether it's time or space. So it's easier for us to provide information. When it starts to become open-ended, it becomes less useful. And I think there are other products doing a really good job at that, like Be My Eyes and things like that.
And the data that's being collected during the tennis match, is that something that was already being collected for archive purposes, for training purposes by tennis players? Or is that something that Action Audio have gone out and sort of made a point to go out and collect these bits of information?
It's a bit of both. Mostly we're working with organizations like Hawkeye, who do the electronic line calling, so to check if the ball's in or out. They do that. They have a ridiculous amount of data. Same with basketball. Hawkeye provide, down to the thumb of every player at 60 times a second, which is phenomenally ridiculous how detailed that data is. And we don't need it, that level of detail. It's been really, Action Audio is really built on that confluence, to be honest, the confluence of the quantification of sport. So, understanding it through data and analysis, and spatialized audio and things like that. So it's a bit of both, but we also create our own data feeds where we don't need as much information, but we need it quicker. So Hawkeye is pretty fast, but we also sometimes need it a bit quicker because you can hear the difference between, immediate and 400 milliseconds later.
And is the technology something that's been created with blind and partially sighted people in at the ground floor? Have there been VI folks involved in the development of the Action Audio system?
Yeah, we can't do it without the work. It's not feedback. We've been working with a whole bunch of blind and low vision co-designers for years now, and they are invaluable. Obviously, like the way we go about it is we try and understand the sport and what makes the sport interesting, and we create provocations, and then we bring them into a process with our co-designers, and they kind of say what's missing. We kind of always like to start at the ground level, like, what do you want to know about the sport? How what would you want to know if you could know that about the sport? And so it's sort of it's a dialogue and it's a collaboration in that sense. But yeah, it's a definite, like, there's no way we could do it otherwise. And people have been so generous and into what we're doing, to the point where they're making sounds and doing all sorts of things and keeping in touch and sending us examples of stuff, months later. It was like, hey, I found this Maybe this is good. So it's feeling like we're building a little bit of a community around the world, which is really nice.
And in very exciting news, Action Audio will be at Wimbledon this year for a very special pilot. How's that been going?
Great. Yeah, no, this year we're trialing the court side. So we've been doing it for broadcast, and there's a natural delay in broadcast for tennis, for all broadcast sport. And that is really good for Action Audio, because we want to be able to have it exactly when the sound's happening, exactly when the sounds, when the events happen in sport. But this year and last year, we've been exploring with Wimbledon the opportunity to actually create Action Audio for the courtside experience. And that's just been, a work in progress. We weren't sure whether people would want to have headphones on or earpieces on in a live setting, knowing that that might be a very significant sense for people. So we feel like we've validated it. We feel like we've validated that, yes, some amount of audio gear on the head is good if it gives enough value, and it seems to. So yeah, really, people seem to feel like they're really wrapped up in the emotion and able to cheer when everybody else cheers, you know, as things escalate, as they do in tennis.
Well, very exciting. Where can we find out more information about Action Audio and follow along where the service will be available next?
Sure. The best place to go is action-audio.com. And that's basically our homepage there. And if you have any questions or comments, or you'd like to participate in any of the co-design work that we do for the different sports as they emerge, our goal is to start to move into more expressive sports like surfing and gymnastics and other things. So we're really keen to get some fans involved in that. And so the website is the best place, and you can reach us through there if you like.
Well, we look forward to hearing lots more about the future of Action Audio. Tim Devine, Chief Invention Officer at AKQA. Thanks for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Wonderful. Thanks, Will.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
You join me here on RNIB Connect Radio at Site Village Central in Birmingham, and I'm with Jesper from Be My Eyes. Jesper, you're actually celebrating your 10th anniversary this year.
Yes, so this year we just celebrated our 10 years anniversary back in January, and I hope by the end of this year we will reach 1 million users globally on Be My Eyes. That's an amazing journey we've been on in the last 10 years, and hopefully we'll get to 1 million by the end of the year.
And just for those people who might not have Be My Eyes on their phones and stuff and things like that and haven't used it, just sort of give us a rough sort of, I suppose, brief overview, because just for those people who don't and haven't used it.
Absolutely. So Be My Eyes is a free app. You can download it on your iPhone or your Android phone. And it started off as a function to call a volunteer. So the volunteer will be able to see through the front-facing camera on your phone and help you with everyday tasks. And today it's available in 150 different languages across the globe. A couple of years ago, we also launched Be My AI, which is a image-to-text descriptor. So you can take a photo of anything and get it described in extreme detail and ask follow-up questions.
Yeah, Be My AI is absolutely fantastic. I use it a lot for checking my clothes and asking questions and stuff. But one thing which I did read about, there's a business sort of version of Be My Eyes. What's that all about?
Yes, so as you know, the app is completely free for our users, but we do provide a number of different solutions for organizations. So for example, one of our first clients was Microsoft back in 2017, and they provide customer support through our app. So if you have an issue logging into Teams, or you're trying to figure out what's wrong with your Excel formula, through a simple button click on the app, you can connect with the Disability Answer Desk of Microsoft, and they will, like a volunteer, be able to see through the camera and help you troubleshoot and solve your issues quicker. And just as an example, before we started working with Microsoft, it took on average 20 minutes to solve a question from a blind or low vision customer. Adding the video function brought that down to 10 minutes. So it's a 50% saving just in time to solve a problem. And of course, customer satisfaction shoots up.
And the great thing about, I think, the business side is that business organisations can use it to link up visually impaired employees with sighted employees.
Correct. So we also have a Be My Eyes for Work solution where you can use the same functionality as on the app, but be able to connect with a trusted support person, a trusted employees. For example, if you're trying to navigate inaccessible legacy software that you have in your company. So that's another area where we are working with enterprises at the moment.
And is Be My Eyes available with all these sort of smart glasses and Meta glasses and so on?
Yes. So we're trying to be agnostic. You know, the whole point is where the best devices that are out there for our communities, where we want to be. And about a year ago, we were the first app to integrate with the Meta Ray-Bans. And today, if you have a pair of Ray-Bans, Meta Ray-Bans, you can just say, hey, Meta, Be My Eyes. And it will call a volunteer in your language 24/7.
That's fantastic. And I believe there's some Oakley versions of the Meta glasses coming out soon as well, too, which I'm looking forward to.
Yes, I saw the Oakleys. I haven't tried them yet, but they look great.
And for people who would like to find out a little bit more about Be My Eyes and download the app, where's the best place for people to go?
So first of all, you can go on our website, bemyeyes.com, where you will find all information about our community, our user services, as well as our enterprise services. But you can also go to the App Store and the Google Play Store and download the app.
Well, thank you very much indeed, Jesper, for chatting with me here on RNIB Connect Radio and telling me more about Be My Eyes.
Thank you, Toby, and have a good afternoon.
I'm on the HumanWare stand and I'm with David, who's going to demonstrate the Monarch to me. David, just firstly explain what the Monarch is, because I believe it's like a Braille tablet in some ways, which can actually show sort of, I suppose, graphics and multi-line and stuff and things like that.
Yes, that's right. I mean, HumanWare, we've been in the business for over 35 years now, and typically we've been our Braille products, either the Brailliant or the Braille Note Touch lines of devices, have relied on just single line technology, as has the whole industry as a rule. So typically, say 20 or a 32 or 40 cell display. The limitations of that, of course, is when you have a multi-line table, like say mathematics or music or even chess, then it's back to the drawing board. People are actually still using paper Braille and are relying on carrying some, you know, really quite heavy documents around and having to rely on embossers. Or to actually create content, they're still using, you know, a Perkins Brailler.
And sort of explain to me, because I've got my fingertips on it at the moment, and it feels very much like there's a very sort of big sort of display, almost like you would find on a tablet kind of thing, but it's got lots of lines of Braille. How does it work when it's putting up, a graphic or something like that?
Sure, okay. So what we have here, just the layout to explain to people, it's if anyone's used a note taker, so we have a Perkins-style keyboard at the front of the device, and then above the actual Perkins-style keyboard, we've in fact got 10 lines of 32 cells, so 10 lines of refreshable Braille if we're reading a Braille document or a DOCX file, which means that you actually have got something that our previous devices didn't have, which is the ability to actually, for users of paper Braille, be familiar with this, to actually use both hands to actually, you know, skim the text and actually, you know, concentrate on the areas that are more relevant to you. So similar in a way to a sighted reading experience. If we're actually using it as a graphics tablet, however, that means you've got plenty of space to actually display a graphic, and also, more importantly, to actually have a Braille label next to it as well. So our Braille is actually equidistant spaced dots, so it's Braille, so we're not using jumbo dots or anything like that. So it's, I will actually, we're just in the main menu at the moment.
Okay.
So what I'm doing now is I've actually got some a graphic that we were looking at earlier on. So let me just, I'm just opening our application, our graphic viewer. And what actually I'm in now is...
Because that feels very different.
So I'm just opening up a file. Easy Shapes I'm opening up here. Now what this is giving you is an overview of four shapes. So it's like a simple geometric exercise. So what we can do is I'm actually going to zoom in, if you like, on one of these shapes.
Because what I can feel at the moment, I think I've got a square and a sort of star or a cross, and then another sort of almost like a triangle shape, but it reminds me a little bit of sort of Braille diagrams, Braille maps and stuff.
Yes, yeah. Okay, so if I just ask you to remove your hand just from the display, what I'm doing now is I'm just pressing one finger onto one of the shapes and I'm just double tapping the button in between the buttons 1 and 4 on my Perkins keyboard, and I've now zoomed in on that shape.
Oh, wow. That's, I mean, it's an actual five-pointed star, which it didn't feel like.
That's right, yeah. So you're now getting the actual clarity. And I'm actually just moving that now. There's a D-pad either side, so I'm actually able to move up, down, left and right in my graphic. And now you're actually able to feel that the shape is indeed a star, as you've pointed out. And then beneath the star, just to avoid any confusion, we've actually got the Braille label as well.
And hopefully it's a star.
Well, to give, again, some idea of the layout of what we're looking at, there's actually a horizontal bar that you're feeling now.
Yep.
And actually there's a vertical bar on the right-hand side of the screen. And that is to give some sort of representation of how much of the screen you're seeing and how much more is available and in which direction you would need to navigate to actually pull that into view, so to speak.
And I suppose the applications for it is probably very much for education, but also for people who want to be able to read multi-lines of Braille.
Absolutely, yes. So, for instance, I mean, we have mathematics, so we're able to do mathematical graphing, so we can put in equations. And actually, whereas before we would have to, you know, again, send that to the embosser to actually see, have I got that right? Has that plotted the lines that I was expecting? Well, I can actually feel that on the display itself in real time. And again, we can just use, as I say, if we're interacting with a teacher or fellow students, we can cut and paste in and out of words, so you know, the maths equations that we're using, expressions. My maths is very shaky, but I believe the terminology is expressions.
And I suppose one question which people might ask is, would you be able to, like, take a picture and scan it and then put it through this and have it in a tactile
form? Yes, it depends. I mean, if you've got sort of very clear lines, then you can get some really good results. If it's sort of, let's say, it's the class of 67 and there's the 40 people all sat on a bench, you know, you're going to get mixed results. But certainly I've put PDFs, JPEGs in here and actually get some pretty good results. You can invert pins as well, so you can just... There's certain parameters you can play with, a bit like almost adjusting the, you know, brightness in a way. You can actually home in on things sort of, you can get some good results. So yeah, it's certainly possible.
And if people want to find out more about the Monarch and other HumanWare devices, where can people go?
So I would suggest going to our website, so www.humanware.com, and then you'll find everything about the Monarch there. We also have different podcasts as well, but there's a list of the content that people can access.
Well, David, thank you very much indeed for joining me here on R&IB Connect Radio and giving me a great demo of the Monarch.
My pleasure, thank you.
Now on Tech Talk, let's talk music listening. More specifically, music listening stats. For me personally, one of the big joys of music is how influential it can be in various different walks of life. And then how your music listening looks like after kind of you've listened for a while and you can track your stats. I've always liked to track my music trends and how they change, what songs are popular at certain times of the year, and maybe what impacts that popularity, maybe certain events. It's nice to then reflect on that using stats. But it's not always easy to do. You can use smart playlists to do this, but it then requires you to create these smart playlists. And, for example, they can't always be done on all devices, depending on what you are using for your music, of course. If you use a streaming service, it can be made a lot simpler because a lot of, like, Apple Music or Spotify have built-in stats features. However, it's not always the case. Now, what I've got for you today is an app that can link up to your streaming services and give you some stats. I'm going to show you Last.fm on iPhone. It does work on other devices too, and it has a web version as well. And this app simply gives you music stats based on the songs that you have listened to and that you have submitted to the app. It's fairly simple. It's a fairly basic app, but packed with features.
Last.fm.
Last.fm, here we go.
Last.fm, scan button.
You get to also experience some of my varied music taste, you lucky people. Right, so the first screen is called...
Selected, Scrobbles.
That's the word they use for listens in this app. If that's what you encountered, that's what it means.
Lifetimes, 9 hour scan button.
First button you encounter is scan. Now, the setup process is fairly simple. So once you've created an account, you can then link your preferred music streaming service to the app. This could be Spotify, this could be Apple Music, whatever works for you. As long as the app supports it, you can link it. And every time you've listened to music, you can then go to this app and tap scan. It will then scan through your listening history and tell you what it has found you have listened to. And you can then accept these or delete these if you don't want certain songs tracked, which I quite like, because sometimes, let's say, if you play a song, but not because you want to listen to it, but you play it, for example, at a party and you don't want it involved in your stats, you can actually filter these out, which is quite interesting. But yes, it does that. You don't have to do it every time you've listened to a song. I often do it if I've listened to a few songs and then I'm going to do something else. I'll quickly get the app to scan and add these to my stats. So this is what this screen simply does. And if I go through it, I can look at the most recent history of some songs that I've played and when I've played them, how long ago. Now, there's only three tabs in this app, so not too complex. The second tab is
Reports, tab 2 of 3.
This is Reports, so let's go into this one. Here is where you can look at your reports of various kind of patterns and things like that, and you can either look at weekly reports, monthly reports, or from the last year, or all time. So let me show you what you are getting here, roughly.
Reports selected. Last month selected. Last week. Last month. Last year. Small chevron left. 20 June. 26 June. Small chevron right. 180 scrobbles. New combined. 180 scrobbles. New peak. Versus. Zero. Last week. This week. Combined chart. One dataset. Date. Button. Combined chart. One dataset. Dataset. Heading. Button. 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 You scrobbled more than 50% of all last FM users this week.
That's quite a nice stat. Yeah, there are some unlabeled buttons. I tend to find they don't get in the way of getting the information I need, so it's not a massive issue, but obviously it would be nice for them to be labeled.
Trends versus last week, 180. Total scribbles, 0, 26. Average, data scribbles, 0, 11. Total listening time, HRS, 0.
Sometimes the information is displayed, might take some time to kind of figure out and get used to.
How you scrobbled. Top artist.
So you can see your top artist.
Top album. Top track.
You can then see your top track of that week.
Button. 138 artists versus 0 last week. 146 albums versus 0 last week. 152 tracks versus 0 last week.
Now, these are stats. This is my first week that I've used Last FM, hence why it says, you know, however many versus zero the week before, because actually this is my first week, but I will definitely be sticking with this app.
Top tags. Pop, 66. Button. Rock, 20.
So now you can look at the genres you've listened to the most.
Button. 80s, 19. Button. Dance, 19. Button. Electronic, 14. Button. Listening clock. You scrobbled the most at 7, this week, with 38 scrobbles.
That's an interesting one. Fairly likely, because that's when I travel and listen to music.
This week. Button. Button. On repeat.
So this is where it looks at what I've repeated, and in this case, I was particularly obsessed with one song, one Dutch song, actually, for a random little example, and it gives me the song, the album, and the artist that I've repeated, and they are all, quite frankly, the same, because that's what got listened to the most.
Discoveries. 99% new artists versus 0% last week.
So this is, again, 99% of what I've played is new artists, but that's because it's the first week. I imagine this week's report will look slightly different.
Select charts, tab, last FM. Select selected.
That's the charts. Again, I like this because you can look at a weekly the chart of the last week, last 7 days, or you can look at the chart of the last month or old time or so on, so you can really kind of pin down what you want to see.
Button.
This button at the top is unlabeled, but it's simply a filter switch where you can switch whether you want to see a chart from the last week or the last month, year or so.
218 artists.
So 218 artists listened to over the last 7 days, and it will tell you which artists and how many listens you have of each artist.
See more button.
It won't give you all of them because there's that see more button.
Armin van Buuren, 14 scrobbles. Elton John, 6 scrobbles. Alex Warren and Jelly Roll, 5 scrobbles. Armin van Buuren, Ferry Corse.
So yes, a very nice mixture of artists there. That's quite diverse, but yeah, there's a bit of electronic there. There's a bit of old school Elton John and some modern Alex Warren.
226 albums. See more. Brief.
Armin van Buuren, 14 Scrubbles, Bloodline, Single, Alex Warren and Jelly Roll, 5 Scrubbles, Brief, Armin van Buuren, Ferry Corsten, Rank 1.
So there you go, that's your albums, again, ordered in what you've listened to the most for that last week.
226 albums. See more. 246 tracks.
Then you've got the same for tracks.
See more. Bloodline. Alex Warren and Jelly Roll. 5 Scrubbles. Button.
So that had 5 listens over the last 7 days, which says quite a lot about how much different songs I listen to every day if the most listened to song of the week has only 5 plays.
Destination. A State of Trance 2024 Anthem. Armin van Buuren. Ferry Corsten. Rank 1 and Ruben Durand. 5 Scrubbles. Button. Are You Ready for Love? Remastered. Elton John. 5 Scrubbles. Button.
So all 3 tracks with 5 listens.
Only Happen. Nectar Wood. 4 Scrubbles. Button.
Then we go down to 4 listens.
Good Luck. Babe. Chapel Roan. 3 Scrubbles. Button. Scrubbles. Tap.
And that is it. So in a snapshot, that is Last.fm, music stats that you can get every month. Now, music streaming services offer their own versions. I know Spotify has Spotify Wrapped. To my knowledge, although I'm not a Spotify user, so feel free to correct, I think you can only get that at the end of the year rather than throughout your listening. Apple Music's replay function is also doing similar things. However, a bit different in a sense that maybe the stats aren't as detailed and you can't really break them down by kind of week, year or anything like that as such. However, the good thing is in iOS 26, it is going to improve in a few little ways, especially that it's not going to be a web interface anymore. It will actually be built into the music app. But if you want something else to track your music stats, no matter what music streaming service, then Last.fm is certainly very much the app for you. So hope you've enjoyed it. Let us know what you think of Last.fm if you want to give it a try, or if you have other suggestions of tracking music stats that we may not have thought of. And if there are other more interesting music stats that you like to track that I've not mentioned, also let us know. techtalk@rnib.org.uk is the email address.
That's just about it from us this week. Thank you, as always, for being with us. We really appreciate that. If you want to get in contact with us, if you've got any tips or comments or anything you want to share, please do at techtalk@rnib.org.uk. We always love to hear from you. We'll be back with you same time, same place next week. But from me, Callum Stoneman, Hubert Barkovich and Jackie Brown, bye for now.
See you next week.
See you soon.
Bye bye.